This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, the Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy, and we seem to have established a new tradition. Whenever we want to preview a division, a crazy trade happens first that merits immediate discussion. And some guy named Erik Karlsson is now a San Jose Shark. The official trade, there are a lot of moving parts here. Erik Karlsson and Francis Perron leave the Ottawa Senators, go to San Jose for Chris Tierney, Dylan DeMello, Rudolph Balcers, Josh Norris, a 2019 or 2020 first round pick, 2019 second round pick, two conditional picks, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Exactly.
So the immediate reaction, I think, from us, from Twitter, from anyone, was that this trade was a coup for San Jose, that it was a disaster for Ottawa. Now that you've had a few days to sort of let it permeate, do you guys still feel that way? What do you think?
I'm not sure it was a disaster for Ottawa, because I just don't think that... I mean, the whole... Like, looking at the entire body of work or the entire situation, yeah, disaster with a capital D. But the actual trade itself, I'm not sure that you were going to get... Like, you weren't getting market value for the guy, because almost always... When you're in a position where you have to trade a star player, you're not going to get equal value coming back. You're just not. And there were only so many teams who could make this trade. And for whatever reason, the Ottawa Senators seemed to think that this needed to be done before training camp started. I don't agree. But if that was the objective, then you've certainly painted yourself in a corner. And, you know, they did manage to get some return on it. It's not... great. You know, I mean, none of these draft picks might work out, who knows? And the players they got are, you know, a third line player and a fifth or sixth defenseman. So it's not looking great for Ottawa.
Yeah, I think they needed more. And I know what you're saying, Ken, but at the same time, Erik Karlsson is so good that we know there was several teams interested, obviously. San Jose won. You know, we knew Vegas was interested at certain points. We knew Dallas was into it as well. So how you don't stack those offers against each other, I'm not sure. And I know there's things to work out. But for me, you know, the Sharks don't have a very good prospect pool because they're one of the better teams in the league.
Right.
Fair enough. Don't need prospects when you have present day goodness, and you know you got to make those sacrifices. But having said that, you know, Josh Norris was one of the players in the deal. He's unsigned because he's at the University of Michigan right now playing NCAA hockey. Now, he could very well sign with Ottawa when his career with the Wolverines is done. And, you know, he could be a decent second line player. I think that's a ceiling. Mm-hmm. But for me, you know, if I'm Pierre Dorion, I say, look, I'm giving up the best player we've ever had, talent-wise. Mm-hmm. I got to have Ryan Merkley, who San Jose took in the first round this year. High risk, high reward offensive defenseman. He's got some attitude issues that he's working through. You know, the mental game is coming. The defensive game is coming. But his puck handling, his skating, the way he can put points on the board from the blue line are fantastic. I feel that you at least have to shoot for the moon when you're making this trade on the prospect end. If it doesn't work out, then it's... You know, you say, well, you know what? I mean, we at least put our best foot forward there. And, I mean, the other thing with the draft picks is these are going to be San Jose draft picks. How high are they going to be?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, great. We got the 28th pick overall.
And I agree with you all the way about Ryan Merkley because, you know, look at what Vegas gave up to get Max Pacioretty. Montreal had no leverage either. Pacioretty had to go, and they got Suzuki, which I think is a much higher tier of prospect than Norris. And I love it for San Jose because, okay, well, before I go on, you have a thought on that.
Well, yeah, but that trade that Vegas made was contingent on signing Pacioretty, which they did. So that makes it a more valuable player.
Yes.
Okay? And San Jose doesn't have as valuable player in Karlsson because they don't have him signed.
Right.
If they had been able to sign him, I'm assuming that if they had an agreement in place where they could have signed him, that would have been a way better deal.
And I'm glad you said that.
And I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, no, I was about to actually talk exactly about that. And what I love for the deal, whether San Jose had control over it or not, the fact that there's no extension for Carlson meant that the price of the trade was kind of like a trade deadline rental type price to me. And maybe they're confident they can sign Carlson later. Maybe it hasn't even been discussed yet because Carlson wants to see if he and his wife are comfortable there. But for the Sharks, they're betting on themselves, and they've proven time and again over the years they're a really attractive market. They have a great room, so many leaders. Evander Kane, boom, he signed almost immediately a 7-year extension. He was so happy there. And that's volatile Evander Kane, who often seems to clash everywhere he goes. Even he felt he fit into San Jose long term. So if you put the Sharks in a situation where they can get a cheaper price for Carlson, and then they can say, hey, we'll take a year to show you how awesome our market is, I think they're going to win that bet.
When have they ever lost a free agent? When have they ever lost a guy that they had who ended up signing somewhere else? I'll wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ed Belfour is the only one I can think of.
I'm sure somebody's going to come and say, well, there's this guy. But, I mean, really, once you get in that culture and in that weather and in that place, like, it's San Jose's amazing because, you know, the players there can live and not be mobbed and not, you know, not be scrutinized too heavily. I mean there is a pretty rabid fan base there, but you know, I mean, it's a pretty good place to ply your trade.
and again that's why I think Ottawa could have gotten more, because if Doug Wilson's like, well, you know, we haven't signed a new extension, if you're Pierre Dorion, you're like, come on.
Yeah, you know, you
come
on. It's San Jose.
He's going to re-sign with you. Like, I mean, this is not like a big situation where he's had to agonize for years over whether this team is going anywhere. I mean, the Sharks could win the Stanley Cup this year.
So they should have either gotten Thomas Hertl on the player side, or they should have gotten Ryan Merkley on the prospect side.
Or how about just Hertl and Merkley for Carlson?
Yeah.
Would that be more
fair?
Well, I mean, because now, like part of this is, I think they're trying to bullshit everybody with, like, look at what we got. 6 assets.
Yeah, there's so many
cards. You know, like, it's like,
look at all the assets.
Yeah. It's like, wow, I traded my Lamborghini for 18 Pintos. You know? I'd rather get the quality back than, like, just get wowed by this, like, oh, look at six assets, like, with a capital S and a capital A.
Yeah.
Six assets. They're going to be in the Ottawa Senators Hall of Fame.
Who needs
someday.
The $10 bill when you've got 78 dimes? I don't want to step on the toes of our Pacific preview, which is coming later, too much, but I think quickly I want to hear your thoughts on just where the Sharks rank now in the division, having added Erik Karlsson. Are they the class of the Pacific now?
I think they're pretty close. I mean, Calgary is a big X factor because they've got some nice players at every position. They got a new coach. But, I mean, either Brent Burns, Marc-Edouard Vlasic, or Erik Karlsson, or two of them can be on the ice basically the entire game now.
Yeah.
That's tough to beat.
I mean, we had him second already. So to make him first, I think, is not a huge stretch. And I definitely think that they are, you know, I mean, we had Calgary first. I think they can certainly surpass Calgary. I think the most important thing for San Jose is, and in my opinion, this trade puts them from that sort of periphery of Stanley Cup contender, like kind of a cup contender, but a little bit on the outside, to right there, to right in there, to a team that can win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, that's fair. And we'll talk about it more next week in the Pacific podcast. But for now, we're going to cover the Metro Division, and we're going to start at the bottom. And in New York, you can choose the Islanders or Rangers. Things are not looking too good. But at least the Rangers seem to have come to terms with it, and they're moving forward with a plan. But at the bottom, we have the Islanders that are still grieving, I think, the loss of John Tavares. And they still have Matt Barzal, the reigning Calder Trophy winner. But if you look at the offseason additions, they were Band-Aids at best. Valtteri Filppula, Leo Komarov, Matt Martin. A few of those guys are professional tankers. Komarov and Martin
are from the Leafs tanking era. Yeah.
Those are guys you lose with.
Yeah, they're guys you lose with on purpose, I think, with all due respect to those guys. So, I don't know. I mean, Islanders, I've tried to tell the Islanders fans on Twitter and stuff like that they do have some hope. They have good prospects. They had a great draft getting Wallstrom and Dobson.
Yeah.
They have Kiefer Bellows. Yeah. Barzal is still very exciting to build around. But Islanders fans say, we don't want to hear that anymore. People have been saying that about us for years. We always have good prospects. We always have high draft picks. And we always screw it up somehow. because, I mean, theoretically, Griffin Reinhart was supposed to be pretty good, too. So was Michael Dalcol.
They didn't have Lou Lamoriello then.
That's right. So that's my question.
They didn't have Lou Lamoriello, who oversaw the tank in Toronto. He was the general driving the tank.
That's right.
In Toronto.
That's right. He's the Sherman of tanks.
He's the Sherman of tanks, exactly. So that's sort of my question. And I think we agree that the Islanders are going to be pitiful this year. But do you see hope for this team? Is there a reason to get excited over the next couple years over the Islanders?
Yeah. I think this year is definitely like ground zero for tanking. But like, you know, we sort of joke about guys like Matt Martin and Leo Komarov, you know, coming in and helping them lose. But at the same time, those are veteran guys that will establish a baseline of professionalism.
Yeah.
And, you know, Martin can fight. Komarov is very chippy. Like, the Islanders won't be fun to play against. They're not going to get, I mean, they might lose the game, but they're not going to get run over in a way that will be embarrassing. It's not going to expose the young players. And, I mean, they still have Jordan Eberle. They still have Anders Lee. They're not going to be, like, horrible, but they don't have what it takes right now to be anywhere near a contender. But they do have Matt Barzal, and that's the most important part of a rebuild already established. They have a number one center.
Yeah.
That's key. And then when you have, as you mentioned, Matt, you know, Kiefer Bellows, Oliver Wahlstrom, two top flight wingers. They have Noah Dobson, who could be a number one defenseman in like 3, 4, or 5 years. They have a lot of the elements there. Ilya Sorokin.
They have Bodie Wild.
They got Bodie Wild.
Card.
They got Bodie Wild, who could be a very good defenseman as well. They got Ilya Sorokin, still in the KHL developing, could be a very good goaltender for them. So right now, it's about making sure that losing doesn't become a long-term habit. And I think in bringing in those veterans like Komarov and Martin, and even Jordan Eberle is a good guy, doesn't done much winning in
his
career.
He'll probably be traded. Yeah.
But at least they're not going to be like a train wreck the way Ottawa is right now.
Right, and we can't forget who's now coaching them. Barry Trotz, Stanley Cup winner.
And you've got
Trotz, and you've got Lou Lamoriello, you've got Mitch Korn, who's being brought in to work with Robin Lehner, who's basically, he may as well be a clean slate, and Lehner's come to terms now. He spoke last week in the Players' Tribune about being bipolar, and that might explain a lot of the mental problems he's been sort of known for, being so emotionally volatile. So he's sort of come to terms with what he's dealing with, and you never know with Mitch Korn. I mean, he's been a wizard working with so many goaltenders over the years, including some guys like Dominic Hasek back in the day that didn't have this elite pedigree at first. So there are winning decision makers on this team, and Anders Lee pending unrestricted free agents. So if he doesn't want to sign with the Islanders, you could probably flip him for a pretty nice package and add even more assets to the trade deadline.
Right, and Jordan Eberle as well.
Exactly.
See, the one thing that worries me about the Islanders in terms of their tank is, like, coaches and players don't tank. They won't. It's management has to be the one that tanks, right? Okay, so you've got Barry Trotz, who's never going to probably ever want to tank. You've got some pretty good players who are going to be pretty determined to show that, you know, John Tavares wasn't the be-all and end-all for this franchise. So you may have a bunch of guys that, you know, overachieve a little bit.
Sure.
And then that puts them in that kind of nether world, you know. And so it's going to be up to management to manipulate this roster so that it does tank.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so then you recognize, you know, if we're not gonna re-sign Anders Lee, then let's get him the hell out of here sooner rather than later.
Right. Before he scores 35 goals.
Same with Jordan Eberle. You know, if we're gonna do this, let's do it proper.
Yeah. It's such a perfect analogy because it reminds me of almost a little kid with his little Hot Wheels cars, and like the cars are gonna drive fast. That's all they know how to do. So it's up to the little kid to set up the cars and put them on a trajectory that they're just gonna slam into each other and it's gonna be a disaster. It's so true. Next up, we have the New York Rangers, who, you know, they are pretty low on talent roster-wise this year. They're still a deep team, but they don't have that star power at all these days. But they've turned a corner. They have the letter that came out from GM Jeff Gordon, President Glenn Sather, committing to a youth movement. They actually did the non-New York Rangers thing. They had so many draft picks. I think they had three first-rounders this year, two last year, five in the last 2 years. They didn't make any crazy dumb free agent signings. So to me, this is a team that is showing signs of really caring about turning over a new leaf and committing to youth. The only problem being, of course, Henrik Lundqvist, who is determined to, I assume, play his best. And I almost think that's a problem for this team. You almost want to be able to tank and move Lundqvist out, but he doesn't want to go.
Yeah, but I mean, I think, you know, what we saw last year is Lundqvist is obviously not the king he was 5, 6, 7 years ago. So, I mean, having him now playing a lot of starts, it might not be the worst thing for you. And again, this is another team that has a great young goaltender in Russia, Igor Shesterkin in this case, who will come over in a couple of years and could be an impact player for them. They actually have a great pipeline for goaltenders. They've done a great job stacking up there. But, I mean, when I look at this Rangers team, I think they're going to be decent but not good enough in the Metro, and that's great for them because, as you said, they're rebuilding, they're using their draft picks well. I like the variance they're getting in their draft picks. You're getting a lot of different skills, like Vitaly Kravtsov, big, you know, power forwards, you know, already off to a good start in the KHL. Keandre Miller, very athletic defenseman. I think he's only going to get better. Nils Lundqvist, you know, more of a a mobile D-man, doesn't have the size of Miller, but they have a lot of good stuff coming in. You know, I was in Traverse City, last weekend. Elias Andersson was there. Filip Hedl was there. And these guys look like they will be full-time NHLers. You know, they play that great, responsible game. Both are very fast. This is the year where you let those guys get their minutes, get their feet wet, and say, don't worry about the wins and losses. Let's just get you guys acclimated because you are the future.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they've got a new coach in David Quinn, and I think, you know, I mean, a new guy's going to want to come in and win, and he's going to want to put his stamp on the team, but I think he gets a bit of a pass for a year or two, the way a lot of other guys have, you know, when they've come in for first years with struggling teams. And so I would think that, you know, this year will be the year to kind of
find the culture.
Yeah. Define the culture, kind of, you know, get your pieces in place. Yeah. And then, you know, then when, you know, some of these younger guys start coming up and start being able to play in the NHL and being able to contribute. I mean, Elias Andersson's going to be on the team and he's going to play. But, you know, when he starts to take a bigger role, when he takes over that number one spot for Mika Zibanejad, that kind of thing, you know, then you're going to see this team start to make progress.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think it's possible we underestimate the Rangers if Andersson and Hedl are ahead of schedule. But most of the Rangers roster, I consider them high floor, low ceiling players, especially forward. You know, your Chris Kreiders, your Kevin Hayes, your Matt Zuccarellos. You're going to get 20 goals from all those guys. You're going to get 50 points from all those guys. But you're not going to get higher than 60. You're not going to get more than 25. We sort of know who these guys are. Next up, we have a team that had an amazing season, had the MVP, made the playoffs. So I think Devils fans, I know they were mad at us last year for underestimating them. They'll probably be mad at us again for underestimating them. But I'm going to try and spin this into a compliment. And I've been saying this a lot online as well. So we have the Devils finishing sixth. But I think it's because Ray Shiro is doing a great job. He's being very mature about how he runs this team. And he told me when we spoke about 2 months ago, he hates building teams through free agency. He thinks it's the wrong way to go. So he was very conservative in the summer. And I think he's playing the long game. He understands that this team was ahead of schedule. But if you look at what happened to the Ottawa Senators, they made the conference final. They made this aggressive trade for Matt Duchene. They blew up their franchise. They traded away Shane Bowers and that pick that's going to become Jack Hughes.
Yeah. It's going to become Jack Hughes.
Yeah. The Senators are the cautionary tale for if you get too far ahead of yourself. Yeah. I think Shiro is looking at a team like that and learning from it, and he's staying conservative, and the Devils might take a step back in order to go forward eventually. And I think we've already spoken about that with Colorado. They're following the same model. So Devils, I applaud you, even though we're picking you to regress a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys have the sophomore slump, eh? Like, it happens a lot. It happens a lot. Like, it's almost not a cliche. Like, it happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so I think if that happens this year with Nico Hischier, the Island, that's enough to put them behind the eight ball, I think, in terms of
it's a slip margin.
Yeah, because they won a lot of one goal games last year. So, you know, I mean, if they're just not where they were last year in a couple of those games, then you end up losing them. You're on the other side of them, and then you know you're looking at, oh boy, we're life and death to make the playoffs. And I don't think that that's unfair to expect that there will be a step back this year.
Yeah, this is a team that has a lot of young players where, I mean, Nico Hischier was fantastic in his rookie year. And I know Taylor Hall told us this over the summer that, you know, a lot of his success was due to Nico being his center the entire time. And Taylor Hall thought, you know, he probably should have got a little more Calder love. But you look at like a player like Pavel Zacha, this is a year I think that's almost make or break for Zacha, where, you know, is he a bottom sixer or is he a top sixer? I think, you know, all reports say he's looking a lot better conditioning-wise, looking faster, and that's good because he's a big guy. I think he needs to prove he can hit that next level. And there's, you know, some pretty exciting youngsters that are going to have to fight internally for roster spots, and that's great. You know, you look at Mikey McLeod turning pro. Joey Anderson is another player that I think has some pretty high upside. Miles Wood is another name that, you know, yeah. he's farther ahead than those guys, but all of a sudden, nothing's a given. And I think that's great for the Devils. I don't see the high end in the, you know, with the exception of Taylor Hall, who is obviously a superstar at this point. I don't see the rest of that high end yet, but I think they're a pretty decent collective. And again, like, you know, we have them sixth, but that could mean 3 points.
Right, in the, you know? Yeah, in the Metro, yeah, you might get five playoff teams, tough division this
and
year.
And they're not gonna take anybody. No one's going to be surprised this year.
Like, and that's their problem.
They're not taking anybody by surprise this year. And how many times have we seen a team like Colorado and a lot of teams, they have this 1 year jump and then they go back to, you know, they sort of fall back to reality a lot of times.
Yeah. That's right. And I do worry about goaltending for the Devils as well.
Yes.
Corey Schneider, unfortunately, is just not the goalie he was a few years ago.
And he's hurt.
He's hurt. He's major hip surgery, right? Yeah. And Keith Kincaid has done an admirable job filling in, but unless he becomes the next, I don't know, Tim Thomas, a guy that is too old to be a prospect and then suddenly blossoms, I don't think...
Or Eddie Lack comes in and does something that's kind of funny.
So I think they're sort of stopping... Sorry, Eddie Lack. But I think they're more stopgaps, right? So I don't think goaltending's a strength for this team either. And to me, behind that first line, I don't think they're going to score many goals. So that's a problem. Next is a team that I find one of the most confusing, most difficult to predict. The Carolina Hurricanes, they make the big trade. They're bringing Dougie Hamilton. They got a new coach. They're talking about this new culture. And it seems like they're blowing it up. They signed Calvin DeHaan. That's a win-now move. But then they trade Jeff Skinner for futures, which is a rebuilding move. Mm-hmm. So I do not know who the Carolina Hurricanes are. We have them fifth, which is, but we don't have them in a playoff spot because we have four teams making it from the Atlantic and four from the Metro. But we have them close, knocking on the door. I still don't know that this team has a true number one center. Sebastian Aho, he played center late in the year. Maybe he becomes a center permanently, but I'm not sure. What do you guys think? I'm at a loss when it comes to Carolina.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, they pick up Michael Ferland. They pick up Jordan Martinook. They pick up these really sort of battle-tested, proven guys who, you know, like Dougie Hamilton. I mean, you know, so, but again, then they trade Jeff Skinner. But, you know, I mean, I think this team is, I think this is another team that's going to take a year to establish its culture. I mean, they just named Justin Williams captain. I mean, that was a big deal because last year they had that sort of rotating thing between Jordan Staal and a couple other guys, and it didn't really work out very well. I'm not sure that these guys are. It's hard to see what their identity is going to be until they start playing. You know, I think their defense is better than it was. I mean, it seemed like, you know, when they had that big four before, all these American guys and everything like that, Justin Falk and Slavin and Pesci and all these other guys, it seemed like as soon as they were identified as the next great defense corps, they went right down the crapper.
Right.
And they really did not have a good year last year. And now Justin Falk, I mean, he's kind of really dropped down this depth chart.
Where is he going to play? Is he going to be on the third pairing? Like, I don't know where he fits.
Yeah, I mean, does he slot in ahead of Slavin and DeHaan? Probably not at this point, you know? Yeah. So,
which, I mean, silver lining, that's a nice problem to have if Justin Falk is on your third pairing.
Yeah.
I do like the defense core, but, I mean, otherwise, goaltending, can it get worse? I don't know. I mean, Scott Darling was bad last year. Peter Mrazek comes in for Cam Ward. I don't really have faith in either of those guys at this point, even though
Mrazek's a bit
younger.
Of a feast or famine guy, though. So yeah. Maybe it's a feast this year, you know?
Maybe. Yeah. But no, Matt, right now they don't have a number one center. It's funny, like Sebastian Aho, the only reason he played center at the World Juniors on that famous line with Patrick Laine and Jesse Puljujärvi is because neither of those guys played center and neither of those guys played a lick of defense back then. Mm. So Finland needed somebody that could anchor that line and make sure somebody would back check. And it worked out great. They won the gold medal. But Sebastian Aho is not traditionally a center. I think the master plan here, and it's really the only course of action they have, is that Martin Netes becomes their number one center. Now, can he become their number one center? Not sure yet. Again, in Traverse City, he looked really good, and he had nice chemistry with Andrei Svechnikov, who they took number two overall this summer. That was a great pairing, albeit, you know, playing against other 19 to 24-year-olds. At the NHL levels can be a completely different story, but Netes has the speed and he has the vision and, you know, size-wise, pretty decent. He's not going to be the number one center this year, but I think he has that capability. That's kind of the only path they have to success right now because Jordan Staal's not going to be that guy. He's your shutdown guy.
Yeah.
Sebastian Aho, I think he's a number two center at best.
And Victor Rask almost cut his fingers off. So he's already moved up one spot, you know, because Rask will be there.
There you go, yeah.
That's right.
So I think that's the path to success, but it's going to take another year.
I do see ceiling with this team. So I'm a pretty big fan of Aho. I think he's a very underrated player. And if Netes makes the team, you know, that we know the defense corps is still going to be one of the best in the conference, even if it regressed last year. I think Slavin and Pesci came back strong near the end of the year, especially Slavin. And Mrazek, he's not ancient. Maybe there's a reclamation project there. So I think fifth is perfect way to slot them. It could break either way. But there's potential. Maybe Svechnikov is the top rookie goal scorer in the league this year. I don't think that's far-fetched at all. Could happen.
I don't know.
So we'll see. Now we're into the playoff teams. And we have a team that if they can just figure out the goaltending, I think they're a really exciting sleeper team. The Philadelphia Flyers. They were in the playoffs last year. They had the amazing breakout season from Sean Couturier. Claude Giroux, second in the league in scoring, moved over to left wing. You got Nolan Patrick as your number two center. Ivan Provorov maturing before our eyes into a Norris Trophy candidate. Shane Gostisbehere, another great season after a down sophomore year.
You're just abandoning the whole like Gostisbehere thing. Right? Like you're just calling him Gostisbehere.
Well,
all
he's
Gostisbehere.
He's Gostisbehere, right? I should tell our interns that way though, because they sometimes misspell. Like they try to correct his name. Gostisbehere. It's a nickname. We know that. And you've got great depth on the wings. You've added James Van Riemsdyk. You've got Travis Konecny, Voracek, Wayne Simmonds on the right. Like there's just great forward depth there. Mm-hmm. A lot to like about this team. But will the goaltending continue to hold the Flyers back?
Well, I think. It's a really interesting dilemma here because, you know, I mean, the last thing you want to do is rush Carter Hart into a situation where he's going to get shelled.
Right.
But who's to say that he won't be able to come in and be their number one goalie this year? I mean, Tom Barrasso won the Vezina Trophy and the Calder Trophy at the age of 18 coming out of U.S. high school. Okay? So it can be done. And if anybody can do it, I think this would be the kind of guy to do it. Yeah. So I think if I'm Philadelphia, I'm like, Carter, prove to us you can't be our number one goalie. Okay? Yeah. Just prove that to us. And if you're not, you're going to Lehigh. But we're going to give you every opportunity to step in here and have success and be our number one guy.
Let me give you a master plan.
Okay.
All right. This is my secret, top secret plan that only everybody that listens to this podcast, and it is a public podcast, will know. You send Hart to Lehigh Valley, but at the end of the season, you bring him up. And I think they win enough with Brian Elliott.
Ooh, a la Ken Dryden.
Yeah.
Ooh. Matt Murray.
A la.
Yeah. You win enough with this lineup that you get into the playoffs. But once they get into the playoffs in recent years, the goaltending has obviously not been good enough. You bring Hart up at the end. You get him a couple of starts in the last couple of weeks of the season.
Right.
Then you make him
your
starter.
He's our man. He's our man.
That way, whoever you're playing has, like, pretty much no scouting report on him. You can say, like, oh, well, we saw him in the AHL, but that's completely different. You put Carter Hart behind Provorov and Ghost Bear and all the great forwards they have. All of a sudden, you're at a tactical advantage where these teams, whoever it is, if it's Pittsburgh or Washington, they're like, oh, we thought we were going to be playing Brian Elliott. And then you Matt Murray them.
Yeah.
That's not
That's
bad.
How the Flyers get playoff success. Right, you bring in Carter Hart.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's fresh. You know, he'll be getting his starts in Lehigh Valley. But, you know, crush him with the starts. You bring him up. He gets some experience. Then you ride him to the playoffs. He's a young guy. He'll love it.
Yeah.
Game every 2 days? Sure, why not? That's how you playoff success.
Nice.
And I do like that Hart, he does have the mentality. At least when he's been interviewed, he's not playing it coy or trying to spout the cliches. Well, whatever happens, happens. No, he wants to be in the NHL.
Right.
And I've talked recently to some people in the Flyers development system, and they say, yeah, that's his attitude. He is determined. He wants to be starting this year. So I like that mentality, and we know he's an extremely hardworking goalie, extremely studious goalie. So I'm a believer in him long term. And it's funny, it's one of those things, if you don't believe in a guy, you have fans on Twitter saying, oh, don't crap on this young kid. You believe in the guy, and then the fans are saying, don't put so much pressure on this young kid. Well, it's catch 22, I guess. Third in the Metro, we have a team that's in go for broke, win now mode. The final prime years of Sidney Crosby and of Jenny Malkin, the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think we know who these guys are. I think they still have at least 1-2 years left of legit Stanley Cup contention. Mm-hmm. Do you guys agree, or are we going to see what happened to Chicago and LA in recent years where finally that cup core aged out and the team starts to decline?
I don't think we're going to see it yet.
Yeah,
we are going to see it, but I don't think it's going to happen yet. I think, you've got still one of the best, if not the best, 1-2 punch at center in the NHL.
Yeah.
They did a few things that confused me a little bit. The Jack Johnson transaction this summer was
quite confusing.
A little confusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're playing Daniel Sprong. They're giving Daniel Sprong every opportunity to be the next Connor Sheary, right? To play with Sidney and to excel in that role. I mean, they've done it in training camp, and the early reviews are very, very good. I worry about, it's funny because I worry about their goaltending, to be honest with you. I mean, Matt Murray, I mean, he's become one of those guys, too, that we almost have to count on him being injured at some point in the season.
Yeah.
And he, other than the playoffs, he hasn't been great.
Last year, he wasn't good.
No,
but he did, his dad did die partway through
right,
the year.
Yeah, yeah.
But I agree, the injuries, I mean, he's got that tiny, tiny frame. I remember when we were at the final, Ken, you were talking to Murray about that. And he said he just cannot put on weight.
No.
No matter how hard he tries. He's, 6'4", 170 pounds?
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Like he makes Ryan Miller look beefy.
Right, right.
And that's tough. I don't know if his body is able to handle the rigors of starting more than, 50 games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're onto something when you say that goaltending is, at the very least, a question mark.
Yeah. And for me, and this might sound weird, but I kind of worry about their wingers a little bit. Like, it seems like... Every year it gets a little worse. And they still have Phil Kessel. He's obviously going to get a bunch of goals. Jake Guentzel, I'd like to see him score in the regular season. I mean, it's great to be like the best player on earth during the playoffs, and that is the most important time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For this team to get into a good position, I think they need more from Guentzel in the regular season. You lose Connor Sheary, ostensibly in a cap move, but then they sign Jack Johnson. That was the big part of the Jack Johnson thing that got to me. They've lost depth on the wings, and Sprong needs to hit. Dominic Simon's another player that they experimented with last year on the line with Crosby, and it worked all right. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little worried that they are becoming the wingless birds that they are naming.
Yeah, I think... Nice.
Yeah.
Hey,
nice.
Don't you mean flightless birds?
Like flightless. Oh, they have wings.
They walk around, flap their wings, but they don't go anywhere.
They're paddles.
I think the drop-off... That drop-off you talked about, it's going to happen with Phil Kessel long before it happens with
Crosby.
Malkin or Crosby.
Yeah, yeah.
For reasons I think we all know.
It's interesting, too, because, Jim Rutherford he's kind of the David Poyle of the East, and that he's an aggressive GM. He's not afraid to make bold moves to improve his team. That got Derek Brassard last year, has made a lot of trades that had significant impacts on the Cup teams that he's engineered. But in doing so, the Penguins have really slowly but surely emptied their farm system. They never have first-round picks. They have very few high-end prospects. So I want to say, oh, it's okay. They're going to trade for a winger this year. Rutherford always fills the holes. But do they have any assets left to surrender and trade? And if you don't, then you end up having to trade a roster player who's pretty important.
Right.
So if you're making an aggressive deal, then do you have to surrender a Jake Guentzel if you're going to be trading for some star forward later in the year? I don't know. Tough to say. At second in the division, we have the defending champions. I think, if I remember correctly, I was the dissenting voice in the room when it came to the Washington Capitals. I think second's generous for them this year. I think they had an amazing summer. They really deserved it. They won the Stanley Cup. But I wonder if there's going to be a literal and figurative Stanley Cup hangover for these guys.
Right,
I think they're going to start the season a bit slowly. And Alex Ovechkin also just became a dad. And they've been trying so hard to win that big one. I kind of wonder if there's going to be almost too much of a tension release and if this team's going to stumble out of the gate. But do you guys agree?
I think they might start slowly. But you know what? I think this team... Like, this is a team that gets it now, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I mean, I think if they go 3-5-2 to start the season, I don't think anybody's going to be running around saying what's wrong with the Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
I think they figured it out.
Yeah.
I think last year they figured it out. I think all those years where they were killing themselves to win the President's Trophy and win the division, they saw what it did to them and how they couldn't do anything in the playoffs. And, I mean, this is a team that's built for the playoffs. They're still a very formidable team. They lost Jay Beagle and Philip Grubauer. You know, I mean, so they're basically the same team coming back. I think this is a team that, you know, been there, done that. We get it. We're not going to cruise through the regular season, but we're not going to kill ourselves in the regular season. If somebody is nicked up a little bit and needs a couple of days off, we'll do it. And then once the playoffs roll around, it's like, okay, boys, we're all putting our big boy pants on and away we go. Mm.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. I think they will start off slow. Something to consider is Braden Holtby did not have a good regular season. Great in the playoffs,
yep.
But very mediocre regular season. I think Holtby will bounce back a little bit there. And then you've got guys that just don't want to lose. You know, like Evgeny Kuznetsov, like... That guy doesn't play at 50%.
Yeah. That guy's awesome. I like
him.
32
yeah.
32 points in 24 games in the playoffs. For
Yeah. Cold as ice. And that's the kind of guy that, you know, when it is a February game against, you know, Ottawa or somebody, and everybody's not really feeling it, Kuznetsov is like, I'm just going to end this game right now. I'm going to get 2 goals and an assist, and that'll be it. And you guys can thank me later. I don't think they're going to be... I think they're going to lose in the first round because it's just too much. It's too much, like, grind from last year. The long playoff run, the long summer. I think there's going to be a hungrier team that knocks them off, but maybe next year, you know, they're a little more dangerous. But I think they'll be relatively fine. And you know what? I mean, they won the cup.
Yeah, I think they're right there. I think they're right there again.
And they might be. It is interesting, the idea that being relaxed would work in their favor. And I remember the Capitals talking to us, like various interviews after last season and the season before, saying that they were so far ahead so early that they went soft and the games didn't matter, and that the dog days of winter, February, March, and they were kind of just waiting around to get to the playoffs. And by the time they got there, like, they'd lost their killer instinct, right? So maybe if they sort of, they're not front runners this time, it's going to work in their favor. The Penguins have had success with that model. The Blackhawks few years back, the Kings have done it. So you never know.
See, I think that winning the cup, like, I think some people might think that it would create some sort of, well, we've done it, and, you know, sort of that then there's a letdown. I think it's going to be completely the opposite for Washington. I think that the fact that they've done it and they've created their legacy, now they can just go out and play. Because I remember talking to Barry Trotz after the Stanley Cup last year, and it was like, what's the biggest difference between this team? And he said, this year we just said to hell with it. You know, we're not going to worry about what people say about us. You know, we're tired of this. You know, let's just go out and play. And I think when this is a loose team that, you know, sort of has its mojo going and everything, they're going to be a tough team to beat.
Yeah. And Luce is right. Like Trotz said that to me as well, that they felt, he used the word pressure. I was impressed that he admitted it. He said, yeah, we We felt the pressure in those years where they were losing to the Penguins. At number one in the division, it's probably one of our most controversial picks in our season preview magazine. We have the Columbus Blue Jackets ahead of the past two Stanley Cup champions. Blue Jackets in number one. And there's a lot of uncertainty there with Sergei Bobrovsky and Artemi Panarin, both free agents this summer. But at the same time, as long as they're on the team, they're on the team, and it's only fair to forecast them that way. So we have the Jackets number one, and we also have Seth Jones projected to win the Norris Trophy. To me, this is a very deep team, and it's an ascending team. You have Pierre-Luc Dubois, who really started to look like a legitimate number one center in the second half last year, and I think is ready for that role. And Jones-Werenski doesn't get much better than the two of them as a tandem. And Bobrovsky is still an elite goaltender in the regular season. He hasn't done it in the playoffs yet. What do you guys think? Did you agree? I mean, I know this was the group consensus, but I wouldn't say it was unanimous in our vote compared to the other divisions. So are you guys on board with Columbus being number one?
I am, because I think Columbus, like Washington and Pittsburgh don't have to finish first.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to, because they know that once they get in, they can turn it on in the playoffs and they can pace themselves. I think the Columbus Blue Jackets are a team that has to prove something. And I think they have to prove something to their fans. They have to prove something to the hockey world. And they have to prove something to some of the guys on their own team. You know, if you want to have any shot of keeping Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky, you know, you've got to create some really good kind of mojo this season. You know what I mean? I think these guys are going to be really interesting. And I think that if I'm Jarmo Kekalainen, it's like, Artemi Panarin, you're not going anywhere. Sergei Bobrovsky, you're not going anywhere. You want to sign with somebody else after the season? That's fine. That's out of our control. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But you know what? We're winning with you, and we're losing with you this year, and we're going to take you as far as we can take you. And then if you want to go, just go. I'm not going to get caught up in this big game of, oh, we've got to get something back for you because we're not going to lose you for nothing. No. You know, you have a chance to win a Stanley Cup with these guys.
Yeah.
Go as far as you can, and then if they want to go, they want to go. That's up to them.
And that's totally the right decision because, I mean, from what I've been told from folks in the know, neither of those guys is coming back.
I don't think they are either.
They're not coming back, so use them because you could challenge for a Stanley Cup, assuming Bobrovsky can win in the playoffs. And really, if Bobrovsky's heading to free agency, he better do well in the playoffs.
Right.
Because whoever gets him next is going to want a goalie that can actually do it.
Right.
I think what you do is, you just go for it. I mean, you have strength at every position. You got great depth. You have a coach who's done it before in John Tortorella. And you have a coach that, you know, we've talked about there being a lifespan for fiery guys, but the Jackets buy in. And they've still bought into what Torts is preaching. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing.
And he got a 2-year extension. Just got a brand new check.
Just got a new extension.
He hasn't worn out his welcome.
So you got everybody going the same direction. You have a year where, you know, you look at the division and anything's kind of possible. You've got a wary Washington team. You know, you got a Pittsburgh team that doesn't look as bulletproof as it used to be. I think you just go for it and. Because what are you going to get for Panarin right now? Again, we talked about the Erik Karlsson return and how it wasn't great. We know that Panarin wants out of Columbus. We know that there's only specific, really large cities that he will go to. So instead of caving and getting, like, you know, Kevin Hayes or something in return, use him. Yeah. And you know what?
And then goodbye.
See you later.
See you. Thanks for everything.
Thanks for the cap space.
Yeah.
You know, we'll use it somewhere on a player that wants to be here. That's cool, but you can't take a step back because this is the closest Columbus has ever been to a legit contender.
Yep.
There's no point taking a step back now.
Yep.
That's right. And I do think that's what's going to happen. I can say that with, I'll call it 90% certainty. I've talked to some people close to the situation, and there is no desire or intent for Panarin or Bobrovsky to get moved from what I've been told. And I think that echoes what you guys are saying, that they're going to go with the same mentality, kind of like Tampa Bay with Steven Stamkos a couple years back when they knew they were in the hunt and Stamkos was unsigned, but they said, well, it doesn't matter. We got to go for broke. And if we lose him, we lose him. And then they didn't lose him.
I'm surprised more teams aren't doing that now, like just saying, okay, like go at the end of the season.
The Leafs did it with James Van Riemsdyk. Islanders might say, it doesn't work, but it's the Islanders weren't in contention though, right? So they were in a much different situation. And then the Blues let Paul Stastny go, and they look pretty good this year, right? So there you go. So Columbus, I think, I would argue the team that's under the most pressure this year in the entire NHL is the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
Will they deliver? Yeah. We think so. And that concludes the Metro Division preview. We're going to end it off next week with the Pacific Division. We'll get deeper into the new Erik Karlsson situation in San Jose and, of course, Max Pacioretty in Vegas. Thanks for listening, everybody.